This is your geopolitical intelligence briefing for February 25th, 2026. I'm your analyst, and today we're examining a critical inflection point where military stalemate breeds escalatory innovation, mounting economic pressures threaten regime stability, and traditional alliance architectures undergo fundamental realignment. Let's begin with the strategic calculus that's reshaping the security landscape in Eastern Europe. 4 years into Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we're witnessing a transformation in how territorial consequences are delivered to the Russian homeland. The numbers tell a stark story. Ukraine has escalated its deep strike campaign from one target per day in 2025 to 9 targets per day in early 2026. We're talking about 240 targets hit in just 48 days, with a geographic reach extending 1,600 kilometers inside Russia. This isn't random targeting. Ukrainian forces are systematically dismantling Russia's military industrial infrastructure, power generation capacity, and critically, their air defense systems. They've destroyed approximately 50% of Russia's Panzer air defense systems, and this creates cascading vulnerabilities. When you eliminate half of a nation's air defense capability, you're not just removing hardware from the battlefield, you're fundamentally altering their ability to protect strategic infrastructure across their entire territory. President Zelensky's anniversary address from his original bunker location was carefully calculated strategic messaging. Speaking to multiple audiences simultaneously, he detailed Ukraine's transformation from aid dependency to indigenous defense production. 3 million FPV drones annually, domestic weapon systems coming online. This represents a structural shift in Ukraine's strategic position. But here's what matters most. Zelensky also acknowledged what he called great fatigue and the most difficult winter in our history. This honest assessment of sustainability pressures tells us that despite military innovation and production capacity expansion, the human cost is creating strategic vulnerabilities that Moscow is calculating into its own decision-making. Now let's examine the Russian side of this equation, because what we're seeing is military degradation compounding across multiple dimensions. Beyond the air defense losses, Russia lost more than 9,000 soldiers beyond replacement capacity in January alone. Think about what that number means operationally. It's forcing consideration of mass mobilization that carries catastrophic political risk for the Putin regime. The Kremlin is now preparing legislative infrastructure to mobilize 2 million reservists. They've implemented electronic conscription notices, eliminated physical service requirements, and criminalized draft evasion. But here's the strategic problem Putin faces. When Russia conducted its partial mobilization of 300,000 in 2022, between 700,000 and 900,000 people fled the country. That's a 2 to 3 times multiplier of emigration versus conscription. If you apply that ratio to a 2 million person mobilization, you're looking at potentially catastrophic demographic and economic consequences that could destabilize the regime itself. The economic warfare dimension is equally revealing. Ukraine's targeting of Russian oil infrastructure cost Moscow $13 billion in 2025 alone, but economic pressure is a double-edged weapon. Putin's regime has shifted war costs to small businesses through new tax reforms. Business owners in St. Petersburg are reporting that their monthly tax burden has jumped from approximately 120,000 rubles annually to as much as 300,000 rubles monthly. When economic strain penetrates your support base at that velocity, you're creating domestic political vulnerabilities that compound military pressures. Perhaps most telling is the forced evacuation of 375,000 residents from Belgorod, roughly a quarter of the region's entire population. This demonstrates Russian inability to provide basic homeland security in border areas. Putin's narrative of a controlled special military operation becomes impossible to sustain when you can't protect Russian territory from systematic targeting. Let's shift to the diplomatic dimension, because what we're observing is negotiator theater without realistic prospects for resolution in the near term. 4 critical issues remain irreconcilable. First, Donetsk territorial control. Second, comprehensive security guarantees for Ukraine. Third, control of the Zaporizhia nuclear facility. Fourth, reconstruction financing mechanisms. Russian negotiators continue advancing historical legitimacy arguments rather than engaging compromise proposals. And here's why. Putin cannot accept failure to achieve Donetsk conquest without fundamentally undermining his imperial legacy project. This isn't about tactical territory. It's about whether his entire strategic framework collapses. The Trump administration's approach through envoy Steve Witkoff reveals concerning asymmetry in engagement. 8 meetings with Putin, 0 visits to Ukraine. Witkoff's characterization of this as a silly war over territory demonstrates fundamental misunderstanding of sovereignty principles and existential stakes for Kyiv. His question, "What does dignity get you if you have that amount of killing?" reflects a transactional mindset that's incompatible with Ukrainian strategic calculations about national survival. Ukraine's assessment identifies China as the critical node for potential conflict resolution. Beijing controls leverage through machinery exports, component supplies, and energy purchases that enable the Russian war effort.
However, Chinese willingness to actually constrain Moscow remains uncertain and potentially overestimated in Ukrainian analysis. Strategic ambiguity serves Chinese interests in great power competition, while avoiding direct confrontation costs. This is classic Beijing: maintain maximum optionality while other powers exhaust themselves. Meanwhile, European Union is fracturing in ways that create dangerous precedents. Hungary's Viktor Orbán blocked the EU's 20th sanctions package, demanding Ukraine resume oil transit before approving decisions important to Kyiv. Slovakia aligned with this ultimatum. Germany and Western European states expressed shock, but lack immediate leverage against member state defection. This creates a pressure mechanism that could build towards forcing Ukrainian territorial concessions. And Eastern European states are watching carefully, increasingly viewing this as a cautionary tale about Western reliability when strategic patience is tested. Now let's examine a technology governance crisis that's straining transatlantic unity and establishing dangerous precedents for dual-use technology weaponization. Russian forces have successfully adapted Starlink terminals for drone operations. This represents a paradigm shift in dual-use technology governance. Ukrainian recovery of units with serial numbers forced corporate acknowledgement and implementation of speed-based restrictions, cutting service for terminals traveling faster than 45 miles per hour off-road. But here's what matters strategically. This weaponization of commercial satellite infrastructure demonstrates how technology can be militarized faster than regulatory frameworks can possibly adapt. Elon Musk's initial response was to call European officials drooling morons when they raised concerns. Only after evidence emerged did technical countermeasures follow. This highlights corporate resistance to international regulatory pressure and establishes a concerning precedent. We're moving beyond traditional arms trafficking to direct corporate involvement in real-time operational military support. European governments are responding with restrictive technology governance approaches, conducting enforcement raids on Musk companies and implementing content moderation standards that conflict with US free speech interpretations. This creates fundamental policy divergence that threatens allied unity on dual-use export controls. We may be witnessing the early stages of bifurcated technology standards between US and European markets. The regulatory lag creates accountability gaps that hostile actors exploit systematically. Unlike previous dual-use technologies requiring physical supply chains that could be monitored and controlled, satellite connectivity creates direct operational control relationships. States lose visibility into military applications occurring through dispersed private networks rather than monitored public infrastructure. This is a governance challenge we're not prepared to address with existing frameworks. Let's shift to regional power dynamics in South Asia, where the US-India relationship just navigated its most severe crisis since their strategic partnership began, revealing both fragility and surprising resilience. Mid-2024 saw three catalytic factors converge. First, Trump imposed 25% additional tariffs on India, bringing the total to 50% over Russian oil imports. Second, renewed US-Pakistan engagement on cryptocurrency and critical minerals. Third, absence of China-focused strategic convergence that previously managed bilateral friction. Trump calling India's economy dead and describing his tariffs as sanctions created domestic political vulnerability for Modi, who faces criticism about American reliability. Yet here's what's strategically significant. Functional cooperation continued across defense exercises, technology sharing, critical minerals, and intelligence coordination. This is cooperation that would have immediately ceased in previous decades. A recent trade announcement suggesting return to 18% tariff rates indicates the relationship's institutional embedding despite personality conflicts. U.S. engagement with Pakistan, combined with Trump claiming credit for India-Pakistan ceasefire resolution, triggered Indian concerns about triangular relationship manipulation. Pakistan nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, while India refused. These dynamics of personal pique are affecting strategic calculations in ways that matter operationally. What this crisis reveals is how the China factor's presence or absence fundamentally alters bilateral dynamics. When Trump's China focus diminished, no institutional pressure contained differences with India. Strategic convergence on Beijing provides the glue that holds this partnership together. Its absence becomes a destabilizing force. For regional balance of power, sustained US-India friction would complicate Quad functionality and reduce pressure on Chinese strategic calculations. The partnership has become what analysts are calling high maintenance but worth it for both sides, with deeper functional cooperation than often recognized but continued vulnerability to leadership changes. Now we need to examine a fundamental shift in European security architecture that's happening independent of traditional NATO frameworks. Poland, the Baltic states, and Finland are accelerating independent defense preparations, assuming reduced US commitment and treating the Russian threat as existential. This isn't just increased defense spending within existing alliance structures. We're witnessing states developing capabilities independent of traditional NATO coordination frameworks. Eastern European defense industrial cooperation with Ukraine firms is creating new production chains that bypass Western European intermediaries entirely. Ukraine's transformation into a defense technology innovator is potentially a structural change in the global defense industrial base. They've expanded from approximately 50 companies to over 700 defense firms. Strategic partnerships with Western companies are creating integrated production rather than simple technology transfer. Ukraine is positioning itself as what they call the arsenal of the free world. Eastern European investment in long-range strike systems capable of targeting Russian territory signals deterrence posture evolution. Combined with Ukraine's deep strike campaign demonstrating vulnerability of Russian homeland infrastructure, this creates an entirely new strategic calculus for Moscow. Traditional buffer zone concepts become less relevant when precision strike capabilities enable territorial consequences regardless of geographic distance. The UK's provision of Nightfall ballistic missiles to Ukraine suggests Western acceptance of this escalatory trajectory, enabling strikes well beyond current geographic reach. This capability expansion forces a resource allocation dilemma on Russia between offensive operations and homeland defense. That's the fundamental strategic problem Putin now faces. He cannot simultaneously sustain offensive momentum in Ukraine while adequately defending Russian territory from systematic targeting. This independent defense preparation parallels Cold War Nordic models of enhanced deterrence through national capabilities rather than exclusive alliance dependence. However, current coordination involves active defense industrial cooperation, creating integrated production networks, suggesting more robust institutional architecture than historical bilateral arrangements provided. Before we close, I want to briefly address a social trend with second-order strategic implications.